Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, and welcome to the 331st episode of the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. I'm Kyle Barton. I'm here with my co-hosts, Diami Plotke, Sean Wisniewski, and Mark Hicks. Today, we're asking Curtis Buchanan the five questions. So, Curtis, welcome back. And first up, how did you get into woodworking?
I had to do something. and that's true.
Well, I think you might have explained that a little bit in our last episode. Yeah. But you said that you started in construction. So how did you get into working construction?
In college.
In college?
Yeah, just picking up odd jobs to get a little bit of money, and doing that, and then we moved. Maryland got a teaching job in North Carolina, and we moved over, and there was a cabinet maker next door to where we lived, an old fellow that kind of took me under his wing, and we started making some furniture together, and that's when I discovered green woodworking, reading Drew Langsner's book and Roy Underhill's, and took off from there. Once I found out about it, I just couldn't stop. It's all I thought about, and so that's what it took me till I was 30. I think if I hadn't have been smoking so much pot when I was in my 20s, maybe I would have found something else, but I don't know. It was a lot of fun, but there was a lot of time wasted, let me tell you. a lot of time wasted, but that's okay. I did discover it whenever I was 30. Yeah.
All works out. Interesting.
Yeah. We might have had similar use. Anyway.
Well, Curtis, what's your favorite tool?
It's just going to have to be the draw knife. It's been my favorite tool since day one. There's just so much about it that I love. You can take huge, giant, gross cuts with it, and then you can take just real fine slithers. You leave glass surfaces after the cut, depending on what kind of look you want. You don't have to do anything once the draw knife has cut it. You only mess it up with some other tool, or it can be followed by other tools. It's great for getting shapes very fast. It's a lovely tool to pick up. I like the whole history behind it, especially the ones that were made in this period that will never exist again. It's whenever hand tool work and the Industrial Revolution crossed. And so you had almost all these draw knives that you see for sale now, like on eBay and everything, were made during this period. And they were made by these blacksmiths that maybe did nothing else besides make draw knives. And their steel laminations are just absolutely impeccable. There'll never be anybody that can make a draw knife like that today. Now, you can make a better draw knife with better metal today, because the metal then is hit or miss. Like, you get draw knives that can't hold their edge, and you get them that are like, you know, magic steel made from Thor's sword or something. it's just all over the place. But just the fact that these beautiful knives were made with such repetition, and that just shows you what, you know, it's a perfect example of how repetition is the only thing that builds skill. You know, it gets poo-pooed in a lot of areas, and creativity seems to be the thing, but you can't be creative unless you have rote skills, and you can't get rote skills unless you are repetitive with that skill. It's impossible. You can't do it. And these blacksmiths showed that their work is just amazing. So I just love these old knives. So it would just have to be the draw knife. Yeah.
I want to say no one's going to hopefully tabulate that, but I think that may be the most common favorite tool. Like, it, really? It that comes up more than often, and for good reason. Absolutely.
Wow.
You know, and I only have one, I think, and it's the Brian Boggs, Lee Nielsen, you know, modern, whatever. I haven't gone vintage on my draw knives. I take that back. No. Those are my spoke shaves. I do have a vintage draw knife, and it's of unknown origin. But that's really cool. And I understand that to be the same. You know, when I was turning, I haven't turned in a couple of years now, but the whole idea of like riding the bevel to get a fine finish and all that stuff, that also it's the same as a draw knife, right? Mm-hmm. You know, how you hold it, how you tweak it, how you bend it, how you bring it to draw it through can affect the finished product. Mm-hmm. And that's such a versatile tool.
Yeah, it is. And just all the edge tools are great, but the draw knife is just so versatile, like you said. And mm-hmm. It can just do so much. I reach for it. It's the first tool I reach for. Yeah, that's the first one. Can I do this with a draw knife?
There you go.
If I can't, then okay. Then I'll go to the next tool.
Curtis, who would you say has influenced you the most?
I could say a lot of different woodworkers. Sawyer, certainly. I wouldn't be anywhere without Dave, and my relationship with Brian, especially in those early years. Brian was always pushing me and pushing my tools and pushing the sharpening of the tools and showing me things that he was just discovering too, that I would have never gone. But nobody could compare to my dad, who was never sawing to a 16th of an inch is beyond his capabilities. You know, he was not a craftsman, but he has just this incredible patience for one. He loves work. He's still alive. He's 97. And
wow.
He loves work. He loves it. Work is what we're here for, according to him. And work is always good, and hard work is even better. But you approach everything with a patience. Everything is, you get all of your tools ready, make sure they're in order, make sure your chainsaw is gassed up and oiled before you move. And then you methodically do the work. You aren't in any rush. You're just methodical. And at the end of the day, it's over. You put everything up, you clean it up, and you put it in its place, and you've gotten a whole lot done at the end of the day. And it's been a good day. I grew Christmas trees with him for 35, 37 years, I guess. I would see this every day with him and how he approached it. The next attribute that he's got that's just amazing, it's even more than what the patience is, and that is his optimism. Every day's a good day. It's a good day for work. There's so many instances, but one of them really stands out. Very simple. We worked all day. It rained on us all day, just drizzled. At the end of the day, we're putting up our tools, and he goes, Well, Kurt, it rained on us, but you know, it was a warm rain. And that was always his attitude. And I always try to look back on that and think of that and think that, you know, work is good, and physical labor is good. Digging ditches is good work. It's righteous work. And we ought to be glad that we can do it. And enjoy the time that we're doing it. So, because he did, and he can't do that now, and he wishes he could. So.
Well, I think he taught you well, because I can definitely hear his influence in what you say. So
absolutely. And having been a former life, but a contractor at some point building framing and chasing a thunderstorm while running a circular saw on some foundation or sheeting, for the first floor of a home. I recognize the well, hey, you know, at least we got it done. Kind of aspect of that. And but at the time, you know, the lightning in the distance was, it was a reminder that we maybe weren't doing the best idea. But hey, we got it done. Damn it, we got it done.
Exactly.
So what has been your biggest stumbling block?
Oh gosh. You know, I don't know. My biggest stumbling block, selling chairs is always hard. It doesn't matter how well known you are. It's always hard. You know, I was going to mention something. I didn't know that. I don't keep up with the social media, so I didn't know that Phil Lowe had passed away. Very sad. I read his articles, you know, back when I was trying to do casework that he was writing for Fine Woodworking. And I always liked, I remember one he wrote on pencil post bed that I just went over and over and over. And then I got to meet him. I was teaching up at North Bennett Street School, and Pete Galbert was assisting me. And Pete and I took off for the weekend, and we stopped in to see Phil, and he was just great. He's real accommodating. And I forget what it was that he was doing, but it kind of surprised me, because here's Phil Lowe, the, you know, one of the finest period furniture makers in the country. And I, you know, like I said, I forget what it was that he was making, but it surprised me. And I kind of mentioned it, and he looked at me and he says, I do whatever pays. He said, you know, and I, you know, in other words, if he's got a high boy to build, great. He's all for it. But it's not beneath him to build somebody a pair of sawhorses, you know.
Yeah.
And I just love that statement, you know, there's no pretense here, you know. And so I was, but anyway, but how'd I get off on Phil? You were, that's the question.
Well, no, I think that's a good thing. The question was your biggest stumbling block. And
probably myself, you know. Just I think that's all of our big stumbling block. Motivation, you know, but believing in yourself. You're always questioning yourself, you know. You know one day you're down in the shop and you say, man, I am just full of it. I am such a fake. I'm terrible. I'm a terrible woodworker. I'm a terrible chair maker. Everybody thinks I'm so good, and I'm just putting on this whole show, you know? Not even good at all.
I didn't realize you were in the shop with me this afternoon.
The next day, you know, you're feeling better and you're feeling good and you're feeling like you're doing good work. But I think just our own selves and our struggle just with believing in ourselves, which is just constant. I think that's probably the biggest stumbling block for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I have one of the interesting questions. So how has the internet influenced your work?
Yeah. And that is such a funny one. I think more than one person gets a big kick out of this that me, the Luddite who just really can't stand screens anyway. In fact, I'm probably sweating right now. They do something to me strange. I don't know what it is. Some psychological thing. I haven't watched television since, like, I think it was 1971, the last time I saw some. I mean, I've seen TV, but I don't watch it. I haven't watched it. And we got a little one in the house upstairs, but it's not hooked up to anything. I think daughters can put a DVD in or something. But I just don't have any patience with it either. But gosh, has it, like, just done wonders for me, not just me, but for a lot of us. I mean, how could I have access to the world? How could I sell my plans all over the place and have people that I'm writing back and forth to in South Korea and Japan that are making these chairs, and it's like we know each other, and I'm answering their questions and all that. You know, I think And Eric and I were talking about this just yesterday. We were talking about the Instagram, and I said, I finally found it on my computer. I don't have an account, so I can't see what the questions are or what the comments are. But I can see what Eric's posted, and I can also see how many people are like following or whatever it is, that number up there. And I said, Derek, I said, well, I saw that it went over 3,000. Eric said, yeah. And I said, and I don't want to pay any attention to that. He goes, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I said, but I can't not look at it. He said, I know what you're talking about. I said, God, it's not good, it's not what it's about. And he said, well, but it's a useful tool. And I said, yes, it is a very useful tool. You just have to use it at that. And I think for those that do use it as that tool, you know, YouTube the same way and their website the same way, and I guess even Facebook the same way. I've never been on it, but I guess you could use it too as a tool. Then it can be a wonderful thing. But then there's the other part of it.
There is the other part of it, but it is interesting because it's truly a worldwide tool at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, your influence is being, you know, responded to and or seen by a bunch of people, more than probably you ever could imagine.
More than a bunch.
If you could quantify that.
Yeah.
And it will never go away. It will be there.
Yeah, and that too.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And I mean, I hadn't looked at those YouTube videos in a while, but at one point I looked and there was over 2 million views on those things.
Wow.
I'm probably responsible for at least
or somebody's wife goes, he's watched half of them.
But even if there's a Kyle among them that's watched it 1,000 times, I mean, look at the reach of that. That's phenomenal.
That's great. And, you know, I have people come by and visit the shop. They'll be with their wife and their wife will go, I know you really well. She goes, I hear your voice through the house. He sits there and watches these. So that's, it's nice. I think, it's been good. I never would have thought that I would have used this technology. But it's been good. And I appreciate that it's there. And like I said, especially with COVID coming on, I already had this presence and I already had these plans being sold. So I was sitting in the right spot to be able to, not have to make the decisions of whether I would have to offer classes live or not. And, that's just been, it's been great. I can't, because otherwise, you know, there would have been no income.
Right.
And so I would have had to have these live classes and, you know, and it's not just me. I'm one of the main caregivers of my parents. My mom's still alive too. She's 94. They live in the same house we grew up in. And my brothers and sisters and I share a responsibility and I'm over there 7 nights a month. And, and while dad's ready to go on, he just keeps, he eats like a horse. I say, Dad, if you're ready to die, you got to stop eating, you know? No, mom cooks these big meals, 3 meals a day for him. And, he eats it up. She's a war bride. He's a World War II vet. And she's a war bride from Italy, from the Isle of Capri.
Off the coast. Wow.
Yeah. And, so she's always whipping up all this stuff and, all this Italian stuff for dad. And he just will sit down every time. He'll say, I believe that's the best meal I ever had. And, so anyway, you know, I don't want to be the one responsible for knocking them off, but.
Oh, well, I didn't realize you were half Italian. So that's interesting.
Yeah. And we're real close with our Italian relatives. We spent a lot of time there and on the island. There's still a slew of them on the island. And and Marilyn and I right now are reading. We read aloud at night. I read to her, and we're reading the Elena Ferrante Neapolitan Quartet novels. Mm-hmm. If you're familiar with those things. And it's about two girls growing up. They're born in 1944 and growing up in the poor neighborhood of Naples. Mm-hmm. And it's got a bunch of levels that really interest me. And one of them is just that it's really getting inside this culture that my mother was part of. Now, Mom was a little older than them. She came here when she was 47. She was 20 years old. In 1947, but just understanding this culture and their dialect. Mom didn't speak Italian till 1963 when she went back for Dad's funeral, because they all spoke dialect. My grandmother never spoke Italian, and my fisherman relatives never spoke Italian. They're all dialect. Mm. And this novel gets into that, gets into the dialect and all the social nuances of whether you're speaking dialect or whether you're speaking Italian, how you're speaking Italian. It's very, very interesting.
Wow. That is, well, are you fans of the those Italian chairs? What is it? Fratelli or something like that?
Chiavari chairs.
Yeah.
Chiavari
yeah.
and Del Ponte.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Kind of like a Posteron type chair.
Yeah, I designed years ago a Windsor chair based on the Chiavari chair, and I've never made it yet. It'll have a woven seat in it, and so the seat's going to have to be done by a cabinet maker, mm-hmm. not me, because it'll be four joined pieces, and so on those corners you'll have cross grain, which is going to give that post more support where it tenons down through it. So it'll be able to stand alone without spindles, you know, so you'll be able to get that light look of a cross piece, two cross pieces going in between the post and then fill in between those cross pieces, whatever. And then your front legs more vertical with very little rake and very little splay to them coming out right out of those front corners. And, mm-hmm. you can do that with that top joinery. I've got it all ready. It just never has. It's one of those things.
Well, that's what needs to be next for you. Because mm-hmm. I love those type of chairs. Those are just beautiful chairs. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to see your take on it. Oh, yeah. There's something to look forward to.
There you go.
Well, we'll see if it ever happens. I love the lightness of those chairs, you know.
Yeah.
I had never heard of them before, and I was, it was Tim Manny was the first one that told me about them.
Mm-hmm.
But before Tim had told me about them, I was up at a friend of mine's house in Western Massachusetts, Peter Marquette, who's a really fine woodworker, made Windsors years ago, and they had this little chair in their house. And I'm not sure they knew what it was, but I picked it up and they said, "Don't you just love that chair?" I said, "My God!" And weighed about 5 pounds,
yeah.
And the parts were so small they were scary. But that's Italian for you, you know,
yeah.
pushing that stuff. And so that was my first time seeing one of them.
Yeah, I know they're. I heard that there's a showroom in Houston that has them, and I'm just waiting for this COVID stuff to get over with so I can go check one out. In person, so it's like my wife goes, "Yeah, that's the first place I'm going as soon as we get vaccinated." So I need to check out these chairs because they're always, you know, holding them up, you know, balancing them on one finger and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, I got to check this out. But anyway, well, with that, let's see, where can folks find you on the interwebs, Curtis?
That website is curtisbuchananchairmaker.com. And then there's YouTube videos. And I guess those are under Curtis Buchanan.
Yes.
Maybe Curtis Buchanan 52 or something like that.
I think if you just search on Curtis Buchanan, they pop right up.
They come up. Okay.
That is true.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you're Curtis Buchanan Chairmaker on Instagram.
Is that okay?
Yeah. At least for the time being. Maybe we can all pitch in and get you a phone.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think
not that you want one. You probably don't want one.
It's not my problem. I had one day, it was a number of years ago, and Alistair Bull, who runs Melbourne Fine Woodworking Studios or whatever, was up here taking a class. He's a North Bennett Street School graduate, and it was his second time here. He'd taken a class before, and he was here with one of his workers taking a class. And so I was going to take him to the airport, and I was in my pickup truck, and they had to do something up in Johnson City. It was the closest town to me. Mm-hmm. And we went up into there, and I pulled out of a parking lot and pulled into the wrong lane to go to the airport. And so I quickly threw it in reverse without even really looking close, and backed up. And right behind me was a brand new little black Mustang, and my trailer hitch was on. And it went right through the horse right in the front. The lady had just bought this thing. And so I get out, and she's not happy at all. So I get back in the truck, and I say, Alistair, reach in the glove compartment and get my papers out, you know. So he gets out the insurance, and he goes, wow, it expires next month. And he went, no. It expired this month already. I went, oh, crap. And then he gets out my license plate information. It expired. And whatever else I needed was expired. Three things, whatever they were all expired. So the policeman shows up, and he asks for stuff. And I say, no reason to look at them. They're all expired.
Oh, jeez.
He said, what are you doing? And I said, I was trying to get these guys to the airport. They're flying back to Australia. He said, okay, I'm going to take care of you and get these. And then I'm going to deal with her. And he said, here's your tickets. Get out of here. So I took off. I got them to the airport. I got back to the house. Now, in the meantime, right before, I forgot an important part of this whole thing. Right before the policeman came, when we saw that the insurance was expired, I had Alistair call my wife with his cell phone and see if she could find, if we had actually paid the insurance, which we had, and the information was there, and she could get it and bring it to me. But what happened is, when she went to go look for it and tried to call us back, you couldn't call back to Alistair's phone because it was this foreign phone.
Yeah.
So all Marilyn knows is that I've had a wreck.
Yeah. Oh, no.
My insurance is expired. Okay. Well, a couple hours later, I come driving in, and I parked in behind my shop, and I walk into my shop, and there's a couple in there who had scheduled to come by the shop, which, of course, I had forgotten that they were going to come by the shop. And my youngest daughter, Maria, is down there entertaining them. And when I walk in, Maria looks at me, and she goes, Dad, you're getting a phone. And so I had to let that die down. That was the most pressure I'd been under to get her phone about how worried she was. I couldn't call you, and all I'd known is I had a wreck, and you know. So anyway, but so far I know one day it's coming, but
yeah.
So far I just keep you know getting away from it.
You've done a good job of holding out so far.
Yes. Yeah. You have to be the champion, because I thought Elio was a champion, but they talked him into one.
Yeah. Well, Elio only had one light just for driving or something. It's not like a real cell phone.
Yeah.
Does it come with like a bag? You pull a phone out of the bag.
It's a bag.
Keep it under the seat.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, Diami, I'm moving right along. Diami, so where can folks find you?
On my phone.
On your phone? Okay, good.
Dang.
At work.
And the number is?
Oh, no, don't call me.
Diami Plake on Twitter.
That's exactly it.
There you go.
And Mark, where can folks find you?
I am at plate11.com. I am on YouTube at plate11 woodworking, and I am on Instagram at Mark Builds It. Sean, how about you?
That he does. I am at SeanW78 on most social medias. Kyle, how about you?
You can always find me at Barton.com on Instagram, the only social media platform that matters. And with that, that just about wraps it up for this show. So if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review.
Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. The best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.